In the United States, there are few contenders for the title of UFO capital. You might think it's New Mexico with its sprawling deserts and a history of UFO crashes and secret military bases. You may guess it's California, covering two-thirds of the West Coast and the location for the sensational Battle of Los Angeles in 1942. Both guesses would be wrong. After compiling data on UFO sightings throughout the U.S., it turns out that the state you're most likely to spot unidentified aerial phenomenon is Vermont. Located in the northeastern U.S., known as the Green Mountain State, Vermont has a history of UFOs stretching back as far as the mid-17th century. On an August evening in 1968, two teenage summer camp workers got to experience the Vermont UFO phenomenon up close and personal. This case file joined the theorists as they don their camp counselor shirts on the shores of Lake Champlain and take a look at the Buff Ledge UFO encounter.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 156, The Buff Ledge Encounter. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
Woo!
Rolling.
Welcome back. Very interesting case file tonight. Pretty straightforward. The account is well documented and all parties kind of say the same thing, so it's going to be an interesting one to get into. But first, before we do anything tonight, I think we definitely have to go into some space news! I mean, huge fucking news on the space front today. Basically, coronavirus was an act of war from Venus.
That's what I heard.
They're creating biological weapons, firing them at Earth. Is what I got from the article. I didn't really read it. That was my understanding of it.
I guess
we're under attack by the Venetians.
If you extrapolate scientists find possible life on Venus, then yes, that could be a plausible theory.
Yeah, if you didn't read any of the article and you just went off the top of your head, you're right.
Okay. Pretty exciting stuff, though. They've found evidence of potential evidence of life. What's that gas called, Dan?
Phosphine.
And from my understanding is that on Earth, it's either created artificially, made when they're making biological weapons, or as a natural byproduct of life.
So what I'm understanding here is you're saying that COVID came from gassy aliens.
Yeah, from Venus.
So like we got global warming from cow farts, and now we're getting COVID from alien farts?
Well, I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong.
And what do Venetians have anything to do with this? Like, why are people from Venice on Venus?
Wait. What are the people of Venus called?
Venusians.
Venusians?
Venusians?
Yeah. Okay. Venusians.
Well, it's close.
Imaginary?
But Venus is obviously, this is an exciting find because Venus is obviously such a, what we thought, a fucking hellhole.
It's yeah, it's like the twin of Earth, almost like size wise they're very similar, but it's just what they say is the runaway greenhouse effect. The place is a fucking hellhole. The only habitable space is the atmosphere, right?
Right. So I watched the press briefing today. This whole thing about it, it's like an extremely fascinating case about what happened, like the whole process that came up to this. This entire work up that was done between like there's kind of like three major scientists that kind of work on it. It was actually like a cross effort between an international effort of scientists, different observatories, different scientists from different very different backgrounds all coming together to work on this. They found out that Venus, people, we've known for a while that Venus is, yes, it is in the bottom part of Venus, like the ground. so to speak, is an unlivable hellscape. It is
a hot
just,
mess.
Hot mess. It is 220 degrees Fahrenheit all the time, constant raining sulfuric acid. Just nothing can survive there. We sent one probe there. It lasted like an hour or 20 minutes or something. Russians sent one there and it was gone. Like, it's just like nothing can survive there.
So what if they're able to somehow manipulate their environment for that time being, just to be like, hey, look at this place. It fucking sucks. Don't come here. Stay the fuck away from us. Earth is a mess. We do not want you here. Either that, or there's just a bunch of Johnny Storms that live there and they can survive in that environment.
Well yeah, perhaps from the evidence that they've gathered so far, why scientists can confidently say that there is really only two things possible at this point going on Venus, and one of those being, you know, the very good possibility of life, is that phosphine gas, like Braden said, is produced by living organisms. How it's produced and exactly, or why it's produced and why it is most of the time present when there are biological processes happening, scientists aren't 100% sure. Before phosphine gas using as a, you know, to be utilized as like a biosignature or some sort of marker to signify, you know, life somewhere on a planet, this was never really done before. It was never really considered as something that could actually, you know, show that there's life. But the one scientist who started this, she was can't remember her name, Jane Stevens, I want to say. She's an astrobiologist who's kind of leaded the charge on this. She came up with the idea that you could use phosphine gas as an indicator for biological life on a planet. And so what she did is she designed a kind of a test where they would point a radio telescope at Venus, and you would, she is also a specialty in millimeter radio telescope astronomy. So she's like, okay, phosphine gas absorbs radio frequencies at a very specific level. So we're going to take this design, this experiment design, and we're going to take out that exact frequency. So when we point the radio telescope at the planet, if this frequency is missing, because it's been absorbed by the phosphine gas particles,
right,
then we'll know that there's phosphine gas on that planet.
Genius.
And so,
holy, I thought they used some sort of smelloscope.
Seems legit.
No.
Incorrect.
So they pointed there, they saw a visible dip, and she's like, okay, well, this is enough to go on for us to get another observatory to take a look at it. So I think they did one in Hawaii. They used an observatory in Hawaii, and then they used another one in South America. And so to verify the results, and both of them showed this dip. So showing the presence of phosphine gas. Now, the presence of phosphine gas in the atmosphere of a planet, I remember there was an article a while ago, a couple, like either last year or the year before, about Jupiter having phosphine gas. So, and we know, you know, it's pretty good to say that Jupiter itself is not a place for life. But no, the thing is,
who would want to go there if all it's going to happen is you're going to get more stupider? Like, come on, common sense. This place is terrible.
That's what they want you to believe.
Jupiter's where it's at.
So, but the thing is, the levels at which they are observing phosphine gas on Venus are, they've run the numbers. They've run models, thermodynamic models. They've run computer models of reactions that, possible reactions of that would produce phosphine gas from things like lightning, things like sunlight, things like volcanoes erupting on the surface. None of those, in the models that they've done, the hundreds of models that they run, show the amount of phosphine gas, come even close to the amount of phosphine gas that they're picking up, the levels that they're picking up within the atmosphere of Venus. So the theory kind of goes that if this is some type of life form, it is producing phosphine gas from the temperate zone, because there's a temperate zone. When you get above a certain altitude on Venus, it actually becomes quite habitable. Like the atmosphere is almost the same as Earth. It's like 85 degrees.
We've talked about that kind of briefly before. I think it was in our solar system expansion episode where we talked about you could potentially live in that zone in floating cities.
Right.
Like and the Jetsons.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that is one of the things that during the press briefing, one of the reporters asked, like, what would you like to see, you know, to send a probe back to Venus to look for this life, to verify these findings that you have? And they said, yeah, a balloon would work great. They've sent a balloon there before, they said, and when they sent it there, it only lasted for, you know, a couple hours or something like that, maybe a day. But they're like, we need one that would stay there for, you know, weeks, if not months, to try and find what is making this phosphine gas, if it's possibly life. So I would really say that the scientists are as sure as scientists can be without, you know,
going there,
putting this stuff under a microscope and being like, that is life. So, you know, they made the point to say that we're not saying that there is life on Venus, but there is a very good possibility that there is life on Venus. A very, very good possibility. You know, reporters were saying that could this be anything else? Could this be something else? And the scientists during the press briefing were pretty confident in their answers. Like, no, we've run the numbers and this is what we got. And this is what shows us that there's, as sure as we can be as scientists, like there's two things that are happening. There are two things that could be happening. It's either life or some type of geochemical reaction that we've never seen before.
So this is the most sure scientists have ever been about life outside of Earth. Because they've always talked about like, oh, Enceladus and Titan, maybe under the ice, but they have no real, it's just all speculation. And on Mars, they had methane, but they're like, well, that could be volcanic. Like it's a very strong possibility. But this is the first time they've been like, no, there's not really anything else that we know of that this could be except some type of life.
I mean, the one thing I'd say though is the place that this is coming from is a place that no one's ever been. That's never been explored. You know what I mean? So like, who the fuck knows if the planet can create that gas or not? We have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, but it's interesting for me in that same sense. My argument is that you have scientists who are looking at like, okay, well, what's the easiest explanation that would make sense? And they're saying, well, right now it would be that there's some form of life producing this. That is the simplest explanation based on their numbers. Like, so they're not going like, no, it would have to be. They're saying like, it would make more sense based on everything that we know and we've learned about science that this is being created by life, because anything else is a completely new discovery that it's unheard of. We've never observed it or anything. Is that out of the realm of possibilities? Like, no, but what they're saying is that there's a better chance that it's from life.
I mean, for it to be coming from a completely, you know, unexplored area, that to me is plausible, but.
Well, Venus isn't completely unexplored. Like we have a pretty good idea of the geological processes that go on Venus. Like they have a pretty good picture and the fact of, you know, obeying the laws of thermodynamics and all of that thing that the geological, you know, based on Earth and just, like, I don't know,
as good as a picture you can get without putting fucking boots on.
Yeah, without putting a thing, you know, putting actually walking around on the surface, we have a pretty good idea. But they're saying is like, if this is some sort of geological or geochemical or chemical process, it's something we have never seen ever and has never been comprehended in science ever. It's something completely new. Because nothing produces phosphine gas at the levels, an abiotic process, so a process without biological, any type of biological life form or thing like that. There's no abiotic process that produces the amount of phosphine gas that we see. The only counterpoint I've seen or criticism of the study is there's at least, I think I read one scientist today, John Carpenter, not the director. He said that maybe the data is flawed. He was saying that maybe the radio telescope like picked up a different kind of frequency, or the frequencies are off or something like that. That's his only criticism, which
I wonder if they should use maybe a more like, you know what I mean, tool that's we know is going to get a perfect result, and that's
but here's the thing
talking about the smelloscope.
Yeah,
I think the smelloscope would be the perfect thing to use in this situation.
But there's no way this. I agree with that. That makes sense. But to me, if they discovered this, there's no way that they were like, all right, that's 100%. Like, they've obviously run the numbers. They've checked. They've double-checked. Like, they've looked at it different ways. So, like, all the data being wrong all the time, exactly the same amount of wrong for them to get this wrong conclusion. I'm like, to me, that doesn't make sense, because these are people that, like, they're skeptic by nature. So, like, that's, you know, they're as soon as they find something like this, they're trying to disprove it and find out what it could be, like,
yeah,
logically.
This process of finding this phosphine gas was over years. Like, they started this stuff like 2014, 2016. They started looking, and they kept their findings pretty much under embargo. Like, they kept this really quiet up until like yesterday, when I saw something, I think, pop up, and it was like some of the big point about life being on Venus was leaked ahead of the press briefing, so you kind of had an idea of what they were going to say.
Isn't that wild that they've signed? There's been a group of scientists who have, for the, you know, the better part of a couple years, have been like, the chance, like, they've held it, and they're like, in their heads, they're like, we're not alone in this universe because there's life on Venus, which then exponentially, like, doubles the chances of life being anywhere, because if Venus is what we thought so inhospitable, yet there's life there. I mean, where couldn't there be life?
Yeah. And it at least doubles the chance of us, you know, whatever you're using your mathematical models for predictions of life outside our solar system, it at least doubles it. But I would say it might even go further than that, because you would potentially have two very different, extremely different forms of life existing in the same solar system. In the press briefing, they remarked about, you know, how now with the telescope technology and modeling and all of the tools that we have and the better data that we're getting, we can see now that stars like ours and thars are common. Like, they're not. And for every star, most stars have planets, and that rocky planets like Earth, Venus, and Mars are actually pretty common as well, relatively common. So, you know, putting this and being like, if we found life 100% on Venus, and is whether it's microbial life or, you know, it's space whales, I don't know, you know, gas whales, that would be cool too.
They've tried over 40 missions to Venus. Half have been successful. There's only been a handful of rovers make it down, but we have in the next like 12 years, like a dozen missions going.
So, yeah, I think they said Russia has one. I know like Rocket Labs or something had planned one. And I think we talked about it before when we talked about solar system expansion. Like, I think NASA had some sort of design contest going on for about like a type of like floating.
Yeah,
like a floating kind of lab that would float along the gas seas of Venus or something.
Yeah, so we got a lot of stuff, a lot of cool stuff coming about Venus. I mean, this is the first time of all the space news we've done, this is the first time that you're like, huh, we told you, there's aliens out there.
Yeah.
Even though they might be just tiny little specks or maybe nothing at all. But
we never specified the size.
Like, it is really cool.
We weren't sizist. We didn't say how big or how small.
Yeah, we just said
some
that
of our
there.
Fucking listeners are sizes, though. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, you short bitch over there, Andrew.
Not even the shortest, Zell. Even though you call me out on Facebook, you prick.
I like this one, Andrew. You like this? Genetically engineered beefcake mice retain their muscle mass in space.
This is dope.
Oh yeah!
Oh yeah!
These little jacked mice.
You want to know what the first mice that goes to space that's Jack's? You know what his name needs to be?
What?
Mice Tyson. Fuck yeah.
That's great. So basically, these so-called mighty mice spent 33 days aboard the ISS and retained significantly more muscle and bone density than the control mice that had not been tinkered with. So basically, these fucking yoked mice, all what they're saying is that you just need to do a cycle before space cycle.
What are they? Do we know what they're taking? Like, I'm asking for a friend.
Yeah,
first
it's like
of
a
all.
Fuck. It's mouse CRISPR.
Asking for a friend of a friend.
It's called like there's meteoroids. An engineer.
The it's meteoroids.
The engineering was targeting a protein called myostatin, which plays a significant role in regulating muscle growth. So basically, they just turned it off. So it's like, there is no limit, brother.
That's like that's some fucking anime bullshit.
That is.
I've turned off my limiter.
It's like, yeah, okay. Oh, dude, you look at pictures of these mice. Like there's a picture of like a little mouse beside one of these Mighty Mouse, and you're like, holy fuck, this thing is yoked.
You can have my cheese, bro. It's fine.
Yeah, it's all here. Mice tasting right there. He's fucking prying open the mouse traps, using it as a fucking bench press, laying down.
Hell yeah.
They just engineer these mice so they just can grow extreme amount of muscle and bone density. So and then it does not diminish when they come back from space. So
yeah.
So I assume this would be used for like deep space.
Yeah, it's for like
for humans. Well, like,
even astronauts who only do 6 months on the space station take like years to get their density and muscle mass back up to what it was. So they're trying to figure out a way that so humans can stay in.
So they're gonna have to redesign the spacesuits for like super jacked astronauts.
You send them up just
sleeveless.
Yoked. Sleeveless spacesuits.
Yeah, that makes sense.
With a deep V.
Gonna need some short shorts, dude.
I've got a way better
Tesla
idea.
Short shorts, like
Armageddon 2. Armageddon 2. There's another asteroid coming, but we've spotted it from further away. But this time, we need jack drillers because they've got to survive space.
Fuck yeah. No, you don't even need drillers. You just need a bunch of jack dudes to go punch that fucking meteor out of space. Mice Tyson, dude. Mice Tyson goes up there and gives it a left hook from hell. It's gone. Mm.
All right. What else we got here? NASA reveals the heart of the Nancy Roman Space Telescope is now complete.
Ooh, yeah.
The Nancy Roman Telescope has reached another milestone, and they have announced that the telescope's primary mirror is now complete. It's a 7'9" mirror. 7.9, 2.4 meter. I don't know when it's going to be. When is it? Like, I didn't know when they were going to launch it, though.
I thought
2025.
I think they just stopped giving deadlines on these things because they're always wrong.
Yeah.
But pretty much it's going to be a better, more focused, longer reaching Hubble telescope.
Yeah. Well, and we got that one. We got the James Webb. We got a couple cool telescopes on the way one day.
Yeah. Isn't the James Webb, that's one's going to be finding planets and like bodies orbiting, but this one's going to be like a deep space telescope, like the Hubble just can go deeper.
Yeah, deep into the dark. Where the dark's the darkest.
Where the dark is the dark.
Darker than the dark.
Darker than dark.
Dark dims.
All right, let's wrap that up for space news. That was a lot of space news. We got some interesting Venus one. Let's get into tonight's case file, the Buffledge UFO
incident. Yeah. Another abduction case.
Another well-documented abduction case, as Braden put it.
Very well-documented with a couple of first-hand accounts, some regression hypnosis, and the likes.
I'm going to be more useless on this case file than normal because I'm normally pretty useless, but now I'm just going to sit here Googling myostatin inhibitors here. I'm curious. I don't know what these mice's fucking secret is.
Yeah, Andrew's like, can we sign up for human trials?
I'm down. Let's
just
go.
Hey, just put yourself in as a test subject for CRISPR. Tell them that's what you want, and you're good to go.
Yeah, listen, a little bit, inhibit the myostatin, give me a fucking afro, I'm good. I'm happy.
So, Buffledge is actually the name of a summer camp that is located, or used to be located, on the north of Burlington in Lake Champlain.
This sounds like Andrew's kind of camp.
I was just about to say, I'm like, is this where the mice go?
This is all tying in nicely.
We're signing up. We were gonna make it a surprise for you, Andrew, but we're gonna send you to Buffledge for summer next summer.
I can't wait. It's like fat camp for guys that aren't quite jacked enough.
Yeah. You're on the ledge.
Ben Stiller to fucking shit talk you while you work out. Perfect. Sign me up.
It's like we're going to get like tear stained letters from Andrew. called me Paul.
Yesterday, cap counselor made fun of my calves.
Yeah, I'm not getting as many gains as the other campers.
My shirts are too loose. If you're not familiar with Lake Champlain, Lake Champlain is in, it's in upper New York.
If you're not familiar, neither am I. It's basically what you're saying.
Is it one of the Great Lakes?
Vermont? No, it's Vermont. I'm sorry. Like,
is it one of the Great Lakes?
Not Lake Champlain's not a Great Lake.
Not?
Well, hey, it might maybe it's a Great Lake.
Well, it could be a great body of water.
You know, Zell?
It sits right there, like near like part of Vermont and part of New York. Like, it sits right there, so that's why I got it in my head.
He was close. Dan was close.
Lake Champlain is also home to Champ, the sea monster. If you guys want to look that up,
he's not Champ. They stole him. They stole Ogopogo.
I mean, he's not as cool as Ogopogo, but he's all right, I guess.
Or same monster, interconnected underground rivers,
tunnels.
Yeah,
tunnels.
We'll get there another time.
The primary sources for the abduction case are Michael Lapp, who was 16 at the time, and Janet Cornell. Michael Lapp was a maintenance man at this summer camp, and Janet Cornell was the resident water ski instructor.
I got a couple clarifying questions.
Shoot.
How old did you say Michael was?
16.
16.
16. And you said he was the what?
Maintenance man.
Maintenance.
Well, that's a maintenance boy, first off. Secondly.
Buddy, this is the 60s, bro. You're a man.
Yeah, he's
at
a
16.
Fucking man.
Oh, I guess he probably man of the house at 16. Yeah, I guess
right,
so.
Man.
It's my bad. Michael Lapp, 16, just probably looked like a straight greaser.
He's probably jacked.
He had a full handlebar mustache, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's like when you look back at those pictures and you see like your parents at like age like 16 and they look like they're 35.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I was impressed by Janet Cornell being a water ski instructor. I don't know how you put that on your resume. But that sounds fucking, I don't know what you tell people. For
you don't,
water
no, skiing. You don't tell people that on your resume. You just put a picture of like you in a red bikini. That's, you don't have to even put a title. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. Okay. That check. That makes sense.
Yep.
So like the boy said, this happened in the 60s, specifically 1968 on the evening of August 7th. Michael and Janet were reported to have been sitting, you know, watching what they figured was Venus, some type of glowing light that was in the sky. It seemed to be glowing irregularly.
Yeah,
and right. What tipped them off that it was something that wasn't Venus is that it started to move.
It moved.
It moved.
It moved. It
got bigger.
It moved downward.
Dropped on them.
Like, holy shit. I've never seen Venus do that.
So now they reported that it started out as a type of like, it looked like a round glow. And then as it approached closer, it began to kind of flatten out. Into like a type of, you know, what they could see something was that this larger light that they were observing dropped three smaller lights, seemed to come off of the larger one. And immediately when I heard that, I thought of our buddy Charlie Red Star.
Dude, me too.
That's
the same story on the dock, on the water. It comes down, it splits, and then it goes, seems to split, and they go under the water. Same as Charlie Red Star.
Ooh, didn't that,
you know,
one
what?
That
this
was
is
on
right
camera?
In the same time frame too as Charlie Red Star.
Didn't that one that before, they got on film that went hit the water and like split apart?
Well, yeah,
that was that.
Remember that one too?
Yeah, that's the like the modern UFO video in the infrared, right? It splits
same
apart.
Same idea though, hits the water.
Hmm.
So this one, I'm not sure if these ones went underwater, but it does say that they traveled over the water, and it seemed, the way that they observed it, it seemed to be displaying some sort of intelligent control. Maybe these things were controlled by remote.
He's like, no, that's just Venus and Orion's belt.
Together. The wonderful dance of the cosmos.
Yeah.
They said they reported them doing types of zigzag maneuvers, loops. You know,
they also said it like looked even, like a falling leafs, like,
right. So
style.
I assume they kind of ascended and then they kind of came
like
down
back and forth. When you first learned to snowboard.
Yeah.
You just swoosh down the hill left and right. One edge.
Yep. No, all heel edge.
Yeah. All heel edge.
So then these objects or these three objects that had dropped down, they seemed to, they formed themselves into what seemed to be a triangle. And then two of these objects seem to pull back.
Triforce.
Yes. Courage and what is it? I can't remember the other. Power. I don't remember. What's the other one? Wisdom. That's it.
Triforce.
Triforce. So then one of these glowing objects seem to remain behind, and it seems that one of them, like, it made a sound that Michael described, quoted, saying that it sounded like 1,000 tuning forks.
That is a specific sound. Have you ever struck a tuning fork?
Anybody? No, yes. I don't. Is that where it's like?
Yeah. So when they tune a piano,
like E,
when they turn
like E.
Yeah, when they tune a piano, they have tuning forks, and that's how they tune. And then you smack it, and it'll just like ring for like a minute almost, and like a hum almost like wow.
Do all tuning forks have the same pitch, or is it like you get ones at specific pitch?
Yeah, so when you tune a piano, they have a bunch of different tuning forks, and they tune to like A440, because that's like, so A as in 440 hertz, and then they tune from that up. But yeah, so if you had if you struck 1,000 tuning forks at one time, it would be the weirdest fucking sound, man. That's a very specific sound, though. I can picture it in my head, because we used to play, when I was in elementary school, we'd play tuning forks. Everyone had a tuning fork, and you'd strike it. So, like, you'd play.
What fucking cult school did you go to?
You know exactly what cult school I went to.
Oh, you did go to a cult school.
I did go to a cult school. That's not a lie.
Oh, shit.
100% a cult school. And we had
you ding the tuning fork. Ding, Jesus is good.
Special school.
Honestly,
vampires,
Jesus is your friend.
You are not that
Jesus
far off.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
You're not that far off. Everyone would have a note, and then you would go, you would have the music, and be like, oh, I'm a quarter note, so I got to strike it. And then you do it. And it was like this weird, like almost like a bell symphony. Anyways.
No wonder you were a fucking angsty teen with dyed black
it's
hair.
Easy,
is that,
it's easy
I wonder
connection.
If that school has any idea how much they failed you.
Guys, how many times have you tried to summon demons by offering your soul? Is what I want to know.
More than the average man.
Probably.
Anyways, I just thought when I read that, I was like, man, that's a really like bit eerie sound to strike that like that many tuning forks going at once.
Here's my thing. Would it be like, because I can just picture the 2D. I don't know if I've actually ever heard one, but I could imagine like even just one, just it kind of be a little bit mesmerizing. So do you think if like so many of those would struck, it'd be almost overwhelming?
That's what I would imagine. But
yeah, they didn't report like it was like ear covering or ear splitting, but it was just the sound. I'm not even sure if it was like not a pleasant sound, because if you had all the 1,000 tuning forks and they were either in tune and harmonic, I mean, that might sound kind of cool.
Might sound
I'm
really
not sure.
Cool. Yeah.
But so the lone UFO that stayed behind was either emitting the sound or somehow signaling or something. They said that it passed over their heads and then it shot upward where it disappeared and then reappeared, seeming to tilt to one side, and then it dropped into the lake.
That's what I mean. So, down.
Another Charlie Red story.
Into the water.
So our UFO becomes a USO. So a couple minutes pass, and for some reason, Michael and Janet decided to remain on the dock. I don't know why.
What do you mean for what reason?
Yeah, this is
some
easy
reason.
Why would you not be fucking booking it at this point?
Because this entire time, there's these crazy lights and scary shits going on in these tuning forks. And the whole time, Janet's like, oh my God, are you seeing this stuff? Like, this is crazy. And old Mikey boy's like, don't worry about it, baby. It's cool. It's just the lights. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Just sit back and relax. It's fine.
He's 16 years old. He's a man.
He's not even looking at the sky.
Yeah.
He hasn't looked at the sky
he's
once.
He's too busy trying to figure out the bra strap.
Yeah. Not once all night has he looked up. This is just Janet staring at the stars.
Yeah, man. That makes sense.
Poor Janet.
That checks out. from the information that is
and
available.
she's like, I want to get out of here. He's like, no, it's fine. They're gone now. It's gone.
She's like, I need, let's go. I got to get out there. Yeah, baby. I'm so hot right now too. Let's keep going.
He's just like, he's not even like talking about the same stuff that she's like, did you see that stuff? And he's like, not even
he's
talking
not on the
about
same
that.
Page.
Just,
no.
Yeah. She's like, is that Venus? He's like, yeah, it's Venus. Yeah, it is, baby.
It's all good, baby.
It's all.
Yeah. I read our horoscopes. Said we should make out. Let's do it.
Venus isn't Gatorade. So a couple of minutes seem to pass before this object reemerged from the water, and they described it as it began to start to glide straight towards them. And when it got close enough, they seemed to observe a transparent dome, which was occupied by what they described to be two childlike creatures. And I believe Michael made a sketch of this. When he made his report, like decades later, he made a sketch, a very very well drawn sketch.
We're gonna put it up on the live stream here. If you're
you
listening,
want, you want to put it up right now? So yeah,
let's put it up right now.
So later on, we're gonna get to it. But he gets hypnosis, and does he draw this before hypnosis or after hypnosis?
I think he draw this after hypnosis.
Yeah. So either way, this is what he did. He's an excellent artist. You cannot take it away from him. There it is. If you're not watching the stream.
So, Brayden, you want to go to describe what you're seeing, Brayden? Like, just
describe this craft.
Describe this craft. Okay. Yeah. Well, this craft looks like something I drew in about grade 2 that I got bored halfway with the details. I went, why did I try to make this so detailed? I hate it.
My hand hurts.
Yeah, my hand hurts from drawing these little circles.
It reminds me of the times I like used to try and draw Spider-Man, and you'd be like working on his webs, and you get halfway through and you'd be like, this is way too much.
Yeah. And then the little people have no detail because he's given them like no fucking arms or anything. It's like, it looks like the half the ship has reptilian scales or is like a weird alligator. And there's just,
it looks like an alligator eye closed.
And it looks like one of the childlike ghosts is holding like a martini cup. Or has a martini arm. Martini.
They look like
arm.
Wacky inflatable fucking arm guys.
Yeah. But I get it. Like, so I get how, like, when he described, like, his drawing is fucking terrible. Pay someone. You get a, if you've seen this, describe it to someone who can fucking draw. Right? Like, if I get abducted by a UFO and I get regressed hypnotism and I picture this in my head, guess what? I'm not going to try to fucking draw it. I'm going to be like, I need like a sketch artist that I can close my eyes and detail this to.
No, you have to try and draw it for content so we can make fun of you. But then after you draw it, you should get a professional rendering done. Just
yeah, because this is terrible. Yeah. This is a terrible drawing.
It's exactly what you said. Like, he drew it and he's like, I'm going to give it all these scales on the one side. I'm going to get all the details. And he's like, but the other side, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm tired of drawing the other side of it.
When asked to describe these creatures that he saw within the dome of the craft, described them having elongated necks, the big heads, no hair.
Yeah, baby shaved
large
for you.
Eyes, which seem to wrap around the sides of their head. So it sounds like you're very, you know, your archetypal gray.
Those
aliens.
Short grays.
Yeah. Right?
Sounds very similar to.
Here's a question, really quick. Like, this happened in the 60s. So, was there, like, did we know about short grays at that time? Was there like a common.
Well, Benny and Barney Hill would have happened.
7 years before this. Yeah. 7 years before this was the Benny and Barney Hill case.
What I'm wondering though, like, it's not. Was that common knowledge at that time? Like, there wasn't easy ways of like producing that fucking story.
Well, the Benny and Barney Hill one was the first abduction, like, worldwide news story, was it not? That's the one where she described the grays, and then through the hypnosis, she said like that, like these people, these aliens, these ETs are from Zeta Reticuli. That's from that story, and that was 7 years before. So that was when UFO abductions really started to make like the mainstream. So people,
so he could have heard her description.
Definitely could have. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they could have read it in news, possibly read it in a newspaper or something like that. Or these are the same aliens.
Same group.
Well, he would have been a little kid, though, when he...
Yeah, 7 years. He would have been 11, like, when he heard... Well, not necessarily. He could have heard it any time from 11 to 16.
Yeah, they could have been reprinting that story for years. Like, yeah. If people would read it. People still like hearing about it, so I don't know. Like, you could just keep printing it.
That's fair.
So, the next part of the encounter... begins when Michael says that he sensed a type of kind of communication coming from the beings. Wasn't really sure. And you get this sometimes. We've talked about this on other abduction cases where abductees or communicators with extraterrestrials. They feel like the extraterrestrials are trying to tell them something, whether it's some sort of telepathic connection, but they're not quite sure. Cause again, we've discussed this. Maybe it's a biological thing. Maybe it's a frequency thing. Who knows? Maybe one of those where they're getting the sense that they want to tell them something, but you can't completely understand it.
That's yeah. Correct. There's definitely, you know, fucking shit's lost in translation. When you don't even communicate with language and then you fucking are just trying to put thoughts in someone's head. I'm sure it's just like thoughts and feelings, but we probably don't even think on the same wavelength or even share the same emotional like variation as them.
So I guess this was Michael's attempt to communicate,
yeah.
you know, was to slap his knee and to his surprise, one of the other occupants seemed to do the exact same movement.
Wait, so he just...
As was reported.
He slaps his knee out of like just a normal reaction? Or
he just slapped his knee, whether I guess it's either out of surprise or just like he just...
Well, by golly, he just slaps his knee. By golly, slaps his knee, and then the aliens in the ship just like, oh, it copied me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's weird. So now the craft begins to move directly overhead of the two of them. And then you get this description of a beam of light shooting down directly on top of Michael and Janet. And Michael says that he remembers screaming, "We don't want to go."
This is where he really showed his age and blew it with Janet.
Yeah.
Because he was acting like, "We don't want to go." I didn't hear anything about Janet screaming and wailing.
No.
She was probably embarrassed.
Perfect moment for him to like say something cool like yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, and flip him off. Or you know what I mean?
Kick rocks.
Yeah. Beat it, nerds. They're trying to get busy on the dock.
Yeah. That he describes the light, though, as being so, like, almost like a... He describes it as an X-ray almost, right? Like, you can see his bones?
Well, he's definitely said it's so bright. So I would imagine that he... If he's doing that, like, I don't know whether he lifted it up to his head or he put his hand in front of his face
to block
the light because it's so bright. And then, but yeah, he described being able to see the bones in his hands because it was so bright.
Do you guys know when you have like a really good flashlight when you were a kid and you would put it on like your fingertip or something or like, you know, in the like meaty part of your hand?
Yeah, it glows
and
you red.
Would shine the light through and it would glow red. Like, so like, I couldn't imagine like it being so bright where you're just like, you're like, oh shit, I can see my bones.
No, I think.
What if they're like, what if they're scanning them? Being, you know what I mean? Like scanning them to see if they're like worthy of abducting.
So it is some type of like penetrating X-ray. Light, X-ray of some kind. Yeah. And they're like, oh, let's shot. Yeah, like, oh, yeah, that's the right blood. They check their blood type. Yep, right blood type. Yep, yeah, that's
they're
the
looking
right one.
For something, right? They're looking for them to have some
fucking
type of
R negative.
Or even just to see if they're healthy. You know what I mean? They're
those
good
myostatin
specimen.
Blockers.
Right, yeah, right. That's a good point. I never thought
I got that shit on my head for 5 minutes and now you brought it back. I'm gone again now.
Be on your mind for a year.
I'm getting them.
So another sensation that they described was that this beam also had a type of liquid feeling to it. It gave them a sense of floating. Like they weren't even like standing on the dock anymore. They were free floating in the air. So you're saying, so maybe it is a scanning. It could be some sort of like 3D scanning thing, or maybe it is an anti-gravity, you know, tractor beam, something.
I think at this point, the reason they feel this is because they're being pulled into the ship at this point, whether they were conscious of this or not. I believe at this point they were being abducted. And like, even though they think that they were still on the dock, they had these sensations, and I think, but like whatever that the tuning fork noise was, and the light puts them in some sort of trance. Whether the like vibration and light frequencies just kind of turn off your brain or whatever, who knows what it's doing to you? But like you're out of it.
Some type of sedative. And
yeah, exactly.
What was that case we talked about a while ago where it came to the house and like paralyzed everyone?
Andreessen
affair. Yeah. Same type of thing,
right?
Motherfuckers
just went right through the door.
Yeah, like the craft comes in and like paralyzes everyone with the light and the sound or whatever. It's like the same type of, that's kind of cool. Kind of match up.
So yeah, like Brayton said, that was the last conscious thought that they had, was staring at that that object and seen that light. The next thing after that that they remember, or Michael remembers, is that he could just see the object from the dock and left. And then Michael could see that Janet was standing next to him, but she was in some type of, you know, almost catatonic state, like just standing there, disoriented, drowsy, you know, and the experience was over. Right. And they just kind of both of them. I don't think they really discussed it. They didn't really even talk about it. It was almost like they kind of just almost forgot about it until later.
So they both got space roofied.
Pretty much.
Yes. Yeah.
Jesus.
You say that.
You know, it's weird. It kind of makes me think, you know, I've told the story before of me and Mr. Conspiracy getting spooked in the woods by that loud noise. We had our guns and we froze and we were like, oh, just sat there. Like hearing all these accounts of people being like, and then I woke, came back to, I'm like, man, I could have easily been just frozen, picked up and put back. Other than I wouldn't be able to tell you what time it was. So I wouldn't know if I lost any time.
Right.
During that encounter.
So Brayden, can you tell us, like, after that experience, did you have any disturbing dreams about being kidnapped or abducted at any point?
No, never.
Okay. So that was Michael's experience. So Michael Lapp, the abductee, said, like, for the next 5 years, he never really even thought of that. But then he started having these dreams of being taken, you know, of being kidnapped. And these things were really, and it was really starting to weigh on him. Like these memories or something were starting to resurface. So 10 years later, he decided to contact the Center for UFO Studies, which is the one that is originally founded, or one of the founding members was J. Allen Hynek,
right?
Project Blue Book. And, you know, at this point, Lapp had, you know, pursued what I only can imagine was a lucrative and very good modeling and acting career.
Wait, he became a model and actor after all this.
He went on to pursue a modeling and acting.
So we know right off the bat that this man, first of all, is really, really, really ridiculously good looking.
Of course.
Second of all, we know that he can't turn left.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we know about him?
He knows the files are in the computer.
Yeah.
I bet you it took him a while to come to that conclusion.
It did. But before we get to that, let's take a quick beer break, and then we'll talk about his acting career, and then we'll go on to the investigation of the case and see how it ends up. We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
We're back.
Wake me up before you go.
Hanging
on like a yo-yo. So we were talking about Michael's successful modeling and acting career. How'd that go? Like, what's his IMDb?
One would say prolific, yes.
So what's he best known for, would you say?
It's a good question.
I'd say the 1994 Sears catalog swimsuit.
Wait, 1994?
Yeah, it's when he hit his prime.
What was he, like 50?
Yeah.
surely he's not best known for the Buff Ledge UFO encounter. That's this story.
I'm pretty sure I found his picture online. I'm pretty sure this is him later in life, 10 years later after the Buff Ledge encounter. Pretty sure that's him.
It's a good looking man.
Good looking guy.
I can't tell you that you're not wrong because I have no idea where that picture's from. So
I appreciate the deep V. I love the fact that he's tucked his nightshirt into his fucking ginch or whatever the hell he's wearing. Is that long? Those.
It was like boxers. Really long boxers.
Yeah, it's a different style back then.
Are those really long boxers or really short pants? So that's what I want.
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
That's not him. You're making that up.
I just typed in.
He's not known for anything. Literally,
he's wrong.
Literally, he's wrong. Andrew and Zell have longer IMDb's than this guy. Andrew has more
longer
credits
IMDb's than you.
Yeah, you do.
You got zero.
I do have zero. Just like
zero star
just like,
power.
Just like Moikel.
You got nothing.
Listen, buddy. Listen. If I had zero star power, people wouldn't have made me this. You wouldn't have made me this baseball jersey.
No one can see on the stream.
I can't see anything you're doing. You're just covering your face.
There
up.
It is.
Like that jersey's about as existent as your fucking IMDb career, buddy.
That's good.
Zero. It's fading, nothing.
You guys in those cheap stream setups, you can't see nothing. Just disappeared. Yeah. That's how good that jersey is.
But obviously not a very successful.
He did not
modeling career.
He did not have a prolific career.
Maybe he was a hand model. Maybe he was a hand model. We don't know.
We don't know. It doesn't say exactly what type of model or actor he was.
There you go.
Very true. So almost a decade goes by and Michael, you know, is experiencing these nightmares. He has no idea really who to turn to. And his last choice is, you know, he started to, realize that this might have had some connection with his experience at Buff Ledge that summer.
Right.
And so he contacted the Center for UFO Studies. They put an investigator on his case, Walter Webb, who wrote the book, which seems to be the primary source of information about this encounter, the Buff Ledge encounter. You can Google it, look it up. There aren't many copies.
Nope.
There's a bunch. Like if you go on Amazon, there's maybe a couple of used copies. They run for like $60, $65, I think I saw was the cheapest.
Jesus.
You might be able to find it in some libraries, a public library or stuff. The closest one that I found to me was in the Library of Congress. And the next one was like 200 miles away in like North Carolina or somewhere. So you can find that. Neat.
Chances are slim.
Walter Webb suggested after hearing Michael's story that they try regressive hypnosis, as was kind of the SOP for alien abductee cases at the time.
So they called in Dr. Sprinkle, obviously.
Yes. I can't say that you're wrong because I don't know who did the hypnosis.
Has to be Dr. Sprinkle.
So while under hypnosis by Dr. Sprinkles, maybe, we don't know for sure.
Allegedly.
Michael recalled the experiences that he had that night in August. So he says that he remembered how the beam of light had actually pulled him into the craft. He was able to see the interior, which this craft that was actually a smaller craft, which then took them to a bigger craft. So perhaps it was some sort of either retrieval ship, you could say, or something like that, a scout ship that picked them up, or, you know, was for securing, you could say, for securing specimens, much like us.
Uh-huh.
And took them to a larger craft where they began, you know, what he described, he saw Janet laying on a table being examined. And the examination that he described sounds very similar and has notes that that kind of echo the Betty and Barney Hill case. You know, they were shining lights into her eyes. They were taking scrapings of skin. They were taking what seemed to be, you know, different types of fluid from her body. And Michael was observing all of this. Now, Michael didn't say that these extraterrestrials experimented on him, that he remembers. He doesn't remember any of this, but he does remember having a kind of conversation with these creatures, and kind of, you know, he remembers asking them, you know, why they were doing this. What was their mission on Earth? Why are they
right
here? When he pressed them to explain what they said. What they said was, or what he interpreted them saying, because this is some sort of, I suppose, a telepathic conversation that's happening. It's make life like ours, other places. And he kind of pressed them on this explanation because, you know, to be more clear, it seems that he interpreted them saying that they wished for life to be like a life on Earth, to be like their planet. And their planet is apparently a planet without violence.
Well, that's, I mean, it's a noble task, but
well, it seems like a pretty common theme too, isn't it? Like, yeah, they usually only times when they intervene, it's to, you know, promote
right
peace.
And I think we talked about, you know, the aliens don't resemble the ones that he's talking about, but the other ones we talked about in the other, the Herbert Shermer case was also very similar,
right?
The aliens talking about that they want to observe us and they want to keep us from destroying ourselves, or, you know, there's a lot of cases that are very similar to that. Or that
the aliens must not be very familiar with human psychology, because being abducted by an alien will cause lifelong harm.
Yeah, like trauma. But here's the thing, like, even if we kind of go into like what Bruce Fenton talks about, and like, you know, they're tinkering with our genetics, like, even if say they, like, they're playing the long game here, and they're say taking Janet and putting something in her genetic makeup that's going to pass on to her kids, and then she's going to pass on, and so on and so forth through generations of people, right? Maybe it's maybe that's their end game. There's like, they're just inserting something in the genes that'll be a trait in future generations.
So like it, like gene manipulation by, so taking, slowly taking people off the earth, like removing the violent gene, is what you're saying? Like something.
Well, maybe not even removing a gene, but maybe, you know, they have something to splice in to make you more like empathetic or something.
Like more,
and they're just
right. Okay, more in tune with the universe. More, so instead of maybe not taking the violent gene out, but just instilling something that would just render violence, like we wouldn't need it anymore.
Yeah,
I wonder if while they're at that, they could just go ahead and take out that myostatin as well. That would be fantastic. I'd be into
this
that.
Earth is jacked.
Yeah. Jacked Earth is a happy Earth.
No need for violence when everybody's so jacked.
Well, no, that's like the old Tesla's thing, right? If everyone has a nuke, no one has nukes. So if everyone's jacked, who's going to scrap, right? We're all yoked.
Mutually assured destruction by everyone just being so jacked. No one wants to fight each other.
Yeah.
That makes sense. All your diplomats and stuff, like, you go into like peace talks and everybody's just enormously ripped in these like suits with like sleeveless
suits. No sleeves. Sleeveless suits.
It's just going to be, why are you acting so messed up towards me, bro?
Peace in the Middle East,
so
bro?
Messed up towards me? Ah! Should we have a bench off? Yeah, okay.
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
All peace talks are sealed with like the bro arm, like the arm, the predator arm.
Grabbing the forearms. Yeah, fuck yeah. It's the kind of world I want to live in.
Yeah, it makes sense. We'll get there. We're getting there. Mice, then men. There you go.
Always starts with rodents.
So now, in an effort to corroborate the story, they got in touch with Janet, who had been living as a stay-at-home mom at the time, and she agreed to go under regression hypnosis as well, and she gave descriptions which seemed to verify what Michael described. She said she recalled feeling cold on this examining table. She remembers someone pulling at her hair and pinching areas on her neck. So these recollections seem to support that Michael and her had some sort of abduction experience.
It's weird. I seem to remember them, like a few different cases we've talked about the neck.
Like small marks on the neck and stuff?
Small marks. And like, remember they were talking about like a needle going in underneath the chin and the neck and stuff like that too? I think that was the Andreessen.
I can't remember.
Andreessen was the one where they changed her clothes three times as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was pretty sexy.
Sexy aliens. Yeah. Case file coming soon.
So her memories... And, you know, it seems like she was unconscious, or, you know, mostly unconscious for the the total of the abduction. Lap's memories seem to be a bit more specific, and he said that he actually remembered seeing other humans aboard the craft before he left. He wasn't really specific actually as to whether they were being examined, or I couldn't find whether they were kind of, are they walking around like he was? He wasn't really specific on those points. So not only do you have Janet corroborating this story, Webb apparently also talked to other members of the camp who were, you know, had been working at the camp at that same time during the same period that Janet and Michael were working there. And they had said, he had had a couple of them actually said that they had also witnessed strange lights out over the water. And on the very night of that abduction, that same August, what did I say? August 7th of 1968. So you have that as well, kind of adding to, you know, the veracity of the story, if you want to put it that way, that other people saw something. They saw these lights, or they saw what they couldn't identify as UFOs, or, you know, they couldn't identify as anything else.
Right.
And then there would also go on to report that there were two other employees at the camp that Webb suspected they were also victims of the abduction. He didn't give names, but he reported that this incident may have taken place earlier that summer, and actual several weeks before the incident with Michael and Janet. But he said that it seemed that their experiences mirrored almost exactly what happened to them, that you have these, it started with the strange lights out over the waters, similar to Charlie Red Star, like we said before. And then you have this appearance of this disc-like craft happening, and then perhaps they were taken, or maybe that's all they saw. But, you know, that they might have been abducted and their memories didn't get, you know, because it seems like if something maybe happened to Michael, or to kind of trigger those memories. I mean, memory is a tricky thing. So if he blocked it out, and then maybe some sort of event, I don't know what was going on in his personal life, you know, but.
Well, isn't that one of the things with happen. Like people who experience like severe trauma sometimes automatically just don't remember?
Well, I mean, the brain is a tricky thing. So it's like, if he blocked it out, it could have been some, there might've been some specific event that triggered his recovery of these memories. Like it's not unknown for that to happen.
Andrew, do you know anything about, like, I've heard before, I'm just spitballing here, but I heard before that when you experience severe trauma, sometimes like as their body's reaction to like get over the trauma, it just almost like omits it from memory.
Well, there's such a thing called post-traumatic amnesia.
Right.
Which is something that definitely could have happened to this guy.
So like some bad happens and your brain just naturally, like for whatever reason, just won't remember that day or week or whatever.
Oh, totally. You could completely forget that entire time frame. Like if you completely just fucking disappear. I've never, like, I don't know anything about hypnosis and shit like that. I don't know if that, you know, if it works or if it can bring that stuff back, but PTA is definitely a real condition, and it's actually unfortunately quite common.
So one other interesting thing that is about this case is that if you look it up, you know, if you type in Buffledge encounter, you'll come across at least one or two blogs that talk about this perhaps being some type of hoax, or being that, well, they base that theory on photos which are allegedly taken at Buffledge, and they show what seems to be like the efforts of what they say are camp leaders, and they were doing some kind of like end of the summer kind of prank fest or whatever, but they made up these, they built these large, like it seems to be made out of whatever scrap wood and stuff, but they built these UFOs and they dressed up like aliens and they were running around and like abducting campers. Like that was their prank for the.
So I found, we got these pictures here of, so I get that there maybe were, I get the theory of maybe they're trying to play a prank, because the pictures I have are of UFOs, like built UFOs, like fake UFOs look like they've been built on like maybe like PVC with something wrapped over top of them or something.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not even sure they can move them.
No,
like, I'm not even. No, like you put maybe put some fireworks on top of it, like and light those off. But those things don't even look like they move. So and that there, being,
there's no way that you're gonna look at those, forget about them, and have nightmares about them for the next decade.
Like no. They look not, nothing like Venus.
Okay,
they look nothing like
here
Venus.
Here they are. So if you're watching the live stream, if not, like this kind of small on the live stream, but we'll describe it. They
it
look,
looks like some fucking homemade UFO shit that you would do when you were fucking 13.
I mean, because that's what it is.
Yeah, like it looks hokey as shit.
It's a bunch of like teenagers, like they threw stuff together.
But that doesn't look like camp. If you look at that, it doesn't look like that's a summer camp. There's like people. There's tons of people there, and supposedly the summer camp was more or less empty when this was going on, right?
And also, this summer camp was an all-girls camp.
Yeah, but no,
and
but
I'm
that
gonna
area,
say the they didn't have the know-how to build that.
Oh,
what do you mean?
What do you mean?
What are you trying to say here, buddy?
Huh?
That girls can't
build
UFOs?
You were all at swim camp. What are you trying to say?
Oh, so you're
what
saying are you that say? You're saying because it's an all-girls swim camp that they can't build fake UFOs? Maybe not.
No. I'm not saying this was.
You're
this
telling
wasn't like,
me this is even more important here. We're telling me we got a 16-year-old mechanic or whatever the hell he does working at an all girls camp.
Yeah,
that's what we were saying.
Kid, fucking hit the jackpot.
Yeah, the summer camp job of all summer camp jobs.
Jesus, wow. No wonder he's with a chick 3 years older than him. He had the pick of the litter. Good for him.
Good for him.
Oh, and he was really, really ridiculously good looking too.
Yeah.
But he couldn't turn left, though.
Which is, that's a sacrifice that I'd give up turn left any day.
It happens for some people. But as far as these, like, being a prank or a hoax, were these people, like, flying it like a kite? Like, flying the UFO over the lake as a kite and, like, really fucking
making
with these people?
Or hitting tuning forks in the fucking woods? Like, because this allegedly happened when all of the rest of the campers had gone to a swim meet. So
stole all the tuning forks from the band camp.
Yeah. And they weren't actually going to swim camp. What they were doing is they're pulling this elaborate prank on the 16-year-old maintenance man and the 19-year-old water ski instructor. And they fell for it so hard that they passed out. They got back
blocked
up.
Out the memories.
Blocked out the memories. And he was
dissociative amnesia. And
yep.
Boom. Bingo, bango, bongo.
Like, it doesn't look that good. And then, not to mention that an independent investigator looking into it doesn't even mention it. Like, you think he would have, like, one of the other people he talked to would have been like, yeah, we did this, like, we used to do this UFO thing every at the end of the summer. We would make these fake UFO things. And he'd be like, well, that's interesting. But he doesn't talk about that.
Because he wants it to be real. It's his whole fucking job.
He wants to
his
believe.
Career's based around fucking UFOs.
Oh, you call him a shyster? You think he actually did figure this out and then he didn't report it?
It doesn't add up to me,
bill?
Man.
What pays his bills?
It doesn't add up to me.
I can't speak enough for Walter Webb, what pays his bills. But it seems like, it just doesn't seem like the hoax. Of all hoaxes that you could do, floating a UFO so perfectly and then abducting, what were they wearing, alien masks? Like when they came running up the dock.
It looks like they're wearing like ponchos. It looks like they're wearing trash bag ponchos and maybe like drawn on paper masks. Now, not like paper plate masks.
Zell, you kind of touched on it before we started recording. But what happened if, you know, could it sway us that maybe that Janet and Michael had been dabbling in some hallucinogenics?
So now we're getting to the theories of what it could be. And I'm talking about, we're in the 60s, the heyday of LSD. It's been
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, baby.
Oh, dude, it's been known that it's been we talked about MK Ultra and Operation Midnight Climax, where like giving people LSD and like studying the effects and all this shit. LSD was rampant. It was being pumped around. What if these people, this is one theory. This is my theory. This is not on the internet. I just was like, okay, you're 16, you're 19. Like, you're growing up, you're at summer camp, no one else is around. Hey, you want to, hey, Janet, you want to do a half tab each? Full tab? Two tabs? Well, listen, I don't know how many tabs
are
doing.
Hey, Janet. I think it's fucking Janet being like, hey, Mike.
That's true.
Could, you're really ridiculously good looking.
Could
come on, sit on
could
the
easily be the other way around. 50-50. 60-40 even. I don't know. You do a little LSD. Now I'm starting to tie theories together here. You do the LSD. Venus was in the sky. It was the brightest star in the sky that night. Also had these fake UFOs. Also had the masks that did not look anything like an actual alien, but because you're tripping on fucking acid, maybe you thought it was an alien.
Like, imagine they were just laying on the dock and he's just like, ah, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And like all these fucking 13, 14 year old girls are wearing masks, like jumping around going like,
I mean,
hitting tuning forks. And he's just like, ah,
it sounds ridiculous. And I still don't think that's what happened, but I'm just trying to say, like, if coming from all angles, if you do a large, say that they did a lot of LSD, more than they should have, that it's endless what you can experience. Like, you can't even describe what you could experience if you did that many, that much acid.
And if it's even if it's a little like of a rough trip, like I could see you getting like trauma just from the trip itself.
Well, if you did, I mean, it's rare to have severe lasting trauma from an acid trip. You'd have to do an ungodly amount of acid to really have a trip where you experience so bad that you probably, or you got to be, because there's some people that say you're like predispositioned. Some people just can't do drugs like that. It's just like they're more likely to get a reaction. So that's just one theory, is a drug theory. So it's either there's.
But here's the thing about the drug theory. You then have two independent people who, let's say, just for argument purpose, did drugs. They don't talk about it for 10 years. They grow apart. Or 5 years?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years. They grow apart. By all accounts, they weren't in contact with each other after this. They grew apart. They independently do these hypnotic regressions and independently come up with striking similar stories.
It's true.
What are the odds that two LSD trips line up that well?
I mean, I remember hearing from you when you guys had a mushroom trip, seeing the same guy, same fucking creepy dude.
Well, yeah, and we've all been to the circle. We know what that's all.
Well, I mean,
I don't know what that means, but okay.
We've never done them.
Sometimes people do experience very similar things on hallucinogens. Some people who do DMT and like ayahuasca and stuff experience like the machine elves, like the elf world. And like a lot of people see the same stuff. So that's why that's when you get to theories of like interdimensional aliens, and that's how you talk to them. But that's not here or there. That's another time. It does seem weird that after 10 years after growing apart that they say like their stories come back somewhat similar.
Because like you think at this point in time, 10 years later, one of them would be like, yeah, we did a shitload of drugs. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what, case solved.
I don't know why you wouldn't say that.
Case solved. We did four tabs.
He didn't want to jeopardize his modeling career.
Maybe he did jeopardize it.
Kids.
He did jeopardize it because he's not registered on anything.
Maybe he's got a different name.
True point.
Next theory is pretty much they were abducted by aliens, because a lot of the theories, there's a lot of similarities with other abductions we've talked about. And either there's two, a lot of people always debunked abductions saying like, well, they heard it here, therefore they're more inclined to say that like their experience was like this because they've heard it before. So that's the debunking side. And the other side is like, or they've all experienced something similar because maybe it's something similar happening to them all the time.
The weird thing, well, for me, the weird thing is that this encounter or this report is relatively obscure. Like it's not your Roswell. It's not your Betty and Barney Hill. It's not your, fire in the sky. It's not any of that. So you don't get the kind of thing where you don't get the immediate sense that these people are out to make money. And it's like that they made these reports because we're going to cash in. And when it's like, you have all the seeming makings for the things. Like, you have your Center for UFO Studies people, an independent researcher coming in and telling you, like, yeah, this sounds like legit aliens. Sounds like Betty and it's on par with Betty and Barney Hill. Like, it's got all the hallmarks of a case: missing time, you know, mysterious lights, observations, things like that, days confused, whatever. But, you know, it has all the ingredients to make a great UFO story, and that if you wanted to sell it, but it's all packaged up right there. But it didn't. Like, you can't even find this book. Like, the encounter itself is maybe like a footnote in other books about UFO encounters. You don't really get long, passages about it. You get like little blurbs of like two teenagers in Vermont in 1968. Like, that's all you get.
Yeah. Like one little abstract.
Yeah. So I can't say it was like they're making it up for money, because it's like, they didn't really make any.
It did not profit.
To me, that strikes me as like credible for this one is some of the details that they describe of, like, you know, the tuning forks, like, that is, you know, like Zell said, like, it's a very distinct sound. So it's like, I would never think of that to make up a lie. So it's like, I just like the details of the story. Like, when I hear it, I go like, okay, I find it more believable because I don't find it extreme in one way or another. I don't find it too vague. I don't find the details to be like crazy,
yeah,
where you're like, there's no fucking way you didn't pull out a samurai sword and start hacking these things up. Right? Like,
wait a minute. Are you telling me that you doubt the stories that come out of Stardust Ranch?
No, I never said that. But it's just the little things, like, you know, it dropping into the water. We've seen that. We've heard that so many different times. And throughout the years of, like, you know, these things just not making a splash, just going right into the water, the different lights, you know, the feelings. Just, I like everything about this one. The fact that these people, you know, didn't stay connected, they didn't profit off it, they were independently talked to after and came up with the very similar story. Had they been lying about it back then or now, someone would have fucked that up, unless they were in cahoots,
right
for 10 years.
I agree with that. I could get on board with that. Andrew, what do you think about this one? Our most believing alien fiend over here just loves him, loves encounters, loves everything about him. What do you think?
I'm sorry, I was Googling some stuff about my statin. What's happening? What's going on? No, this one, I don't know. There's not enough here for me to fucking buy it. I think it was a fucking hoax, especially with all that shit, the pictures of the fake UFO stuff. Like, that's way too.
Well, that was something different, though. That wasn't from them. That was someone else trying, like, well, this is why they faked it.
I don't know. I don't.
Just not enough for you.
I don't buy it.
Not enough for you.
It's not enough. I don't know. Nothing. This doesn't do it for me.
There's a few accounts.
A couple kids getting it on the dock, doing some drugs, saw some crazy lights. Venus was in Gatorade. Bingo, bango, bongo. Case closed.
There you go. Dan, what do you think?
Well, like I said, it's a relatively obscure case. Like, Braden brings up a good point where the guy makes the description of it sounded like, his description of it sounding like 1,000 tuning forks. That's a weird description.
It is.
Now that I think about it, it is a weird detail to kind of put in your story. So why would you? That's not something that I've heard in other UFO cases. Like, I've heard the high pitch sounds, maybe stuff like jet engines, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But I don't think I've ever heard it described quite like that.
Just like a fucking
bing or something. You know, a choir of, like, a chorus of harmonic, you know, tuning forks. Like, I haven't come across that yet. It might be out there. Other people might have heard it, and I might start looking for it now when I do my research. But that is a weird little detail. And for me, it's like, maybe something did happen. It's just like, you know, pick them up, drop them off. Maybe.
We don't really know what.
We don't know.
The communication wasn't there.
The X-ray beam was super interesting for me.
That is good. That's the first time I heard that one too. X-ray beam. It's like see through.
And that makes sense to me. It's like, you know what I mean? It just makes me think, like, these people, they were selecting these people for a reason.
You know what I mean? Like they could have just kept going, but they picked them up for a reason.
I don't know if if someone shone an X-ray at you, you would be able to, because you can't see X-rays, so you wouldn't be able to actually see what it's seeing, no. Right? But
I mean, the light thing, it being overly bright makes sense. If it were so bright, you would get that. If it were powerful enough.
Like if you put your hand up to it, it might give you the illusion of like, oh, I can see my bones in my hand because it's so bright. Maybe you can't really
see. I mean, you could, if it were bright enough, like you can see, if you put your hand up to a light source that's like strong enough, like you'll see almost through your hand. Like you can see.
Yeah, sure. Close. But you're not going to see like your outline of your bones. You'll just see like the glow through the outside of your fingers.
If it's strong enough, I think you can.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I have no idea. But yeah.
I have absolutely no idea.
No idea. But yeah, it's a cool case. Braden, what do you think? Did we already do you?
Yeah, I already did mine. I believe him.
Believe him? I think so too. I think
I think something happened.
Of all the cases, this one is, I'm not going to say that's a hoax because there's not really much hoaxing out there. It's just like, it's a simple case.
We all know he was just using this in order to launch his fucking male modeling career.
It didn't work though. All right, we went pretty far in this one. Should we do a UFO case of the week? We got some big news. Let's
talk about the big
skip
news.
It.
We're gonna skip it just because we got some big news that we're gonna drop on you right now.
Heel turn, baby.
Heel turn. We're the bad guys now.
We're the bad motherfuckers.
We're the bad motherfuckers. Woo! Zell
the
sold.
Cream has risen to the top.
Listen, all Zell trying to sell his soul to the devil finally paid off.
Yeah. All right, well, let's just rip the bandaid off. If you've been on Patreon for the last, it's been like 6 weeks since we've started this process. And we said we got big news that we can't tell you yet because we're legally not allowed to because stuff was still in motion. Listen, we've been doing this podcast for almost 5 years.
Wow.
And
almost 5 years, like having fun, just doing the podcast. I mean, the first few years, we didn't do a lot of episodes per year, but we still did
it.
We
all had a lot more hair when we started this podcast.
We all could drink a lot more.
That's true.
When it started. And we've never really profited off the thing. We've always just done it for fun. In the last like 6 months, we've decided that we wanted to become full-time creators. And whatever is out there in the universe brought our good buddy Joe Rogan over. Said, hey, you wanna follow me to this network?
None of that happened.
None of that happened.
we didn't talk to Joe Rogan.
No, we did not talk.
We've never talked to Joe Rogan.
But let's rip it off. Alien Theorist Theorizing is partnering with Spotify.
Woo! Woo. So technically, we're Joe Rogan's coworkers.
Kind of. That's kind of true.
Ish. Michelle Obama's.
Colleagues, basically.
We're colleagues.
So basically, the negotiations went like this. We said, if Joe Rogan got $100 million, there's four of us, so we want $400 million. And you can imagine how that went.
That did not go well.
Free Spotify premium accounts.
Which we may or may not have got at least that.
Matching lime green Ferraris.
I mean, like that's all it took to get us over there, but whatever. It's fine.
So starting October 16th, we will now be exclusively on Spotify.
I should be very transparent of what's about to happen here. So because we're exclusive, Patreon, the live stream will continue. YouTube channel will close. But the live stream will continue for Patreon and you will still get the show early. It will be the live show. No edits. That's the only change. There'll be no edits. So what you just watched is what you'll just hear. Or if you didn't hear.
On audio version.
If you didn't watch it, it's the same. We don't do a lot of edits on the show anyway, but that's one of the difference. And they pretty much, Spotify just put, they just said like, hey, we like the show. We want to partner with you. We want to help you grow. We want you to be part of the team. And now it's a professional decision for the podcast, and we are really
sellouts.
People are going to be yelling it.
Yeah,
that was very well put, Zell. Thank you for being as transparent as your skin.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's in my nature.
Zell can't help but be pit transparent.
I think it's an exciting thing for us. It's only going to help grow the show.
Yep.
And move us to a position where we can finally do this well, we can't do it quite yet, but hopefully sooner than later, be doing this full time as our jobs, which was never even in the realm of possibilities when we started this thing. And that's all because of all of you listening. So thank you. Thank you for listening to a couple fucking idiots that started recording to this in their garage, in their Ginch. It's turned into something where I never had any kind of a dream of like, this is what I want to do. And you guys have made something. You guys made that for me. This is my dream now. It's turned into something that I never thought, and it's taken on a life of its own.
It's all come to fruition.
Yeah, it's all thanks to all you fans that have listened, and I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. So thanks everyone who's always supported us, and it's only going to get better.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, people are going to say like, oh, you sold out, but like, really, we're going to be able to spend a lot more time doing the show. A lot more time doing bonus stuff for the show if you're on Patreon. So the only thing on Patreon's changing is you're going to get a live version, not the Spotify only version, but you also still get all other bonus stuff we currently do. And yeah, we got more time now. We'll be able to do more, create more, do
people
more production.
People are always asking, like, when you do those skits, are they improv? Yes, they're definitely improv.
They're improv.
And now that we have time, they'll probably be a lot fucking better.
Well, they'll still be improv. They'll be us a little more planned, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the news. That's the news. If you've been following along on Patreon for the last 6 weeks, and we keep saying it because we thought it would happen earlier, but I don't know, it's a big company and that stuff takes time.
We had to throw back and forth a couple times.
But you know, it just goes to show you. I mean, if you've ever started, you know, was thinking about starting a podcast or something with your friends, just do it and pursue it, and or any creative outlet with your friends.
Yep.
That you've always wanted to do, just do it and pursue it and stay focused on it and dedicated and never stop trying to improve. And, you know, like, we're examples of what can happen.
If you start something and you like it, just keep doing it. And eventually you'll just naturally want to improve, naturally want to be better. And then more people listen, the more you improve. And then you always hear that story. Like when you hear like, oh, like how these guys start, how they make it that movie, like how they start. And then you go back in their history, like, oh, there's just like a few people or two guys, three guys, a group of friends just started doing something. And eventually good things happen. So,
I mean, I'd love to give some, if you believe you can achieve speech, but I feel like I just fluked out being friends with you guys.
You did luck out.
I know that a little luck involved as well. It's no big deal, but yeah, so that's
right
the news.
Place, right time, is Andrew's.
Pretty much, baby.
That's the big news.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it after. We'll tell you how we got there. Before we go, we got a theorite of the week.
Yeah, I'll just read a couple things here. So we got theorite of the week. This week, we're giving it out to Sammy Baber. Baber? Baber.
Baber.
Or Baber. There's no accent on the top, but she drew a rendition of Braden, Meat Draw Drunk Braden, surrounded by meat beer bottles with an extremely large maple leaf over his private parts. It should be a lot smaller, but that's all right.
Exaggerated. I'm sure it's not, it shouldn't be that big.
That's funny because I thought it should be bigger.
Yeah, well, of course you would. But if you want to see that, it's we'll have it on our social medias. It's in our
I wouldn't be surprised if they slapped that onto the Sistine Chapel.
Well, it's pretty like, isn't it the creation there. Of Adam? Didn't she like read
that's what it's I mean yeah. That's what it is, like the leaf,
it's the creation of Adam, but Braden's
from the Sistine Chapel.
He's like, Porky Pig in it, and he's
exactly, you
know, finger touching an alien.
I know we don't post a lot on Facebook.
We also call it Braden's Saturday morning.
Pretty standard.
We don't post a lot on our public Facebook, but if you want to join the Theorite page off the Facebook page, we post more in there. Because right now, Facebook and social media is just kind of, it's just not fun to be on. So we just...
like the surface of Venus.
Yes.
Yeah. Fucking hellhole.
That's gold.
That's exactly what it is. So
who said Dan can't make funnies?
Yeah.
This is I'm not the
joint.
Like
join
Master Splinter made a funny.
Hey, stay out of my fucking lane, Dan. All right. I don't come into your lane ever.
You can't enter his lane. Well, that's not the problem.
Yeah. You're sexy Braden now. New funny guy.
Okay, let's we're gonna continue on. Patreon's not gonna stop. if between Spotify and Patreon, it's going to get us almost there to full-time status. So we're going to be doing more for our Patreon supporters. And this week, we got Brooke Campbell, Joker Pond. He's trying to get on Rain on Ron Pond's parade. Not sure. E.T.'s finger. Didn't specify which one.
Probably the glowing one.
The non-glowing one.
Was it? Did he do middle finger or was it pointer finger?
I don't even think he.
Well, I think he had like three fingers. Didn't he?
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Zach Nichols, Kelly Hendricks, Cosmic Panda Docs. There's a new one. Biggus Dickus. Spinning and sinning, I'm sure. Ethan Cox, Savannah, and Captain Jive. Thank you very much for supporting the show this week. Please join us on After Hours for a full disclosure of negotiation tactics.
Yeah, we'll teach you how to negotiate on After Hours. And as we always say at the end of these episodes, first off, thank you guys so much and keep those eyes on the skies.
Well, hold up. Don't go anywhere. I'm just going to quickly summarize what we just talked about so everyone's clear what's happening. Alien Theorist Theorizing will be exclusive to Spotify on October 16th, 2020. That means our show will be removed from all other podcast players and YouTube. But don't worry, Spotify is free. If you don't already have it, you don't need a premium account to listen to podcasts and download them offline. It acts just as any other podcast app. It's free. Repeat, it's a free app. Some people think you have to pay for Spotify. You do not. Don't worry, the show is going to be the same. It's still our show. Spotify is investing in us as podcasters and investing in the show to make it better. The only thing that's going to change is the Patreon version of the podcast will be the live version, not the edited version. So that's what's happening. We're really pumped, but we really couldn't have done it without everyone listening. So we truly hope you guys follow us to Spotify if you're not on there already. And a huge shout out to the Patreon and the financial supporters who got the show this far. We really appreciate all your support, and we can't wait to bring you even better, more badass bonus content in the near future. Thanks, everybody. Keep those eyes on the skies.